Hey, Daniel, what's your favorite science fiction movie?
I think my favorite one is probably Primer.
Primer. What do you like about it?
I like that it tells a counterintuitive tale of time travel, but it actually really tries to hold true to the rules. Like, they set up some rules, and then they follow them, and the results are not what you expect, but then you think about it, you're like, actually, that makes perfect sense. So it's, like, clever, it's insightful. That's the best science fiction. It's, like, new idea, insightful comments about how it impacts reality and human life.
Right, but they don't even try to explain how they achieve the time travel. Right? Like, at all.
There's a little bit of yada, yada, yada there, you know? They're, like, trying to do this and yada, yada, yada. Oops, look what happened.
We can travel through time.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. But, you know, it's science fiction. It's not technology fiction or engineering fiction, right? It's like, imagine we had this new thing of science. What would that be like in our world?
Yeah. And can you make a consistent story out of time travel?
Yeah, exactly, which is really a challenge. And as you know, because I've complained about it bitterly, most time travel movies are horribly inconsistent and totally implausible.
If only you could go back in time and fix those plot holes.
Yeah, I would just cancel all those projects.
Oh, man. But then you wouldn't have seen them and you wouldn't be inspired to
go back. Oh, you're right. And then they would be made again and then I would cancel them and we'd be stuck in a loop forever.
Yeah.
But I'd be watching a lot of movies, so I guess that's not too bad.
Yeah, yeah. You'd be creating a paradox.
The entertainment paradox, exactly.
Hi, I'm Jorge. I'm a cartoonist and the creator of PhD Comics.
Hi, I'm Daniel. I'm a particle physicist, and I am not the creator of any online comic website yet.
Yet. And welcome to our podcast, Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe, a production of iHeartRadio.
In which we try to take the universe apart piece by piece and shove them down your ear hole, I guess?
Your wormhole.
Your brain hole. There you go. Exactly. We try to transmit them from our brain to your brain in a way that actually makes sense so you can impress your mom or boyfriend or kids when you talk to them about it.
Today we have an extra special kind of question episode in which we're taking questions from a friend. So today on the program we have Ethan Edinburgh, the host of the podcast Bad Science. Welcome, Ethan.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm very delighted to be here. I also have no comic series on the internet. So
yet.
But I will say that no one would enjoy it because my drawing abilities are very bad. So bad. The worst.
Well,
my stick figures look bad.
Yeah,
stick figures are all you need.
Have you seen the internet?
Okay,
that's
good point.
All you need, stick figures, really. I wasted a lot of time trying to learn how to draw. Apparently, I just had to use stick figures.
So maybe I'm good.
Here you go. Maybe after this episode, you'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we're really happy you're here, Ethan. So tell us a little bit about the podcast Bad Science and where people can find it, and a little bit about yourself.
Sure.
Are you promoting Bad Science? Is that what happens in your podcast? Is it like all about Gwyneth Paltrow?
Yeah, pretty much. That's all that we talk about, her little jean shorts in the Avengers. No, Bad Science, I sit down with a comedian and a scientist every week, and we discuss the inaccuracies of films. So anything from Alien to Star Wars to whatever, we go through and we have a different scientist and we talk about their expertise and try to get down to what's going on there. And I, you know, butt in with my stupid questions, as I'm sure I'm going to ask you guys today. And the comedian also, you know, most comedians I feel are like really curious about the world. So they, you know, also.
Do you think it's necessary to be curious to be a comedian?
Oh, that's a good one. Probably. Yeah, I think so. Or at least nitpicky.
Why is this way? How do people think that's reasonable?
I don't know. I was just having this argument with a friend where, you know, they were like, is it bad that we've complained a lot? And I've said, like, I don't know. It might be show that we're able to dissect the world instead of just accept what's going on. So I think for comedy, that might be, you know, that's like Jerry Seinfeld's whole career.
That's observational comedy. That's right. It's like, why is this way? That's science, basically, right?
Yeah.
So it's a show where you mix sort of a comedian and a scientist on different topics. Mm-hmm. And so you sort of have that sort of accessibility of the science, but also funny. So it's a very kind of show. It's a show that's very kind of in the same spirit as our show.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
so if you
big
like
time.
Our show, you should definitely check out Bad Science.
I think
so. You're
so.
Saying on our show, one of us is smart and one of us is funny?
I'm saying neither of us are smart or funny.
You're just riding that road in the middle.
Riding that that road down into the bottom there.
No, I think it's great to educate people in an entertaining way, which I think you guys do expertly. I do mediocre.
No,
but the podcast, I think, is a great way to, it's a great medium for that, where it's like, oh, I want to learn a bunch of stuff, but I don't want to be bored by it. You know, I also want to know about, you know, the secret Men in Black trivia at the same time. So that's kind of the basis there.
Cool. And so Daniel and I were just guests on your podcast.
Yes.
And so that will be, that should probably already be out now. So you can definitely check that out, Bad Science.
Yes. So fun. Thank you guys again for doing that. Great time.
Yeah, and it was great. We sat around and talked for an hour about the Avengers.
Yeah.
And the science behind the Avengers and the stretches of the imagination in Avengers. And so you should definitely check that out.
Yes, yes.
The
really
good science, the bad science, the engineering, all of it. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, there was a vicious engineering versus science debate that happened that I was in the front row eating popcorn for.
You're like watching your parents argue. It's like watching you uncomfortable. Yeah.
I loved it.
You like to create a little bit of tension on the podcast?
I mean, not on purpose, but if it's there, I'm highlighting it. I want to see that play out.
Cool. Well, today, Ethan, we're answering your science questions.
Yes.
And so tell us, what's your kind of relationship to science? Have you been interested in it?
I'm a very curious man. I have these questions all the time. I've used my podcast as a way to, like, as a self-serving way to learn, but I still have just endless questions. So I'm happy to be here and ask you guys. But my relationship with science is probably somewhat typical. I was in classes in school. I had anatomy and chemistry and these types of things, and I was always fascinated by it. Not very good at it, just so you guys know. Don't have a PhD like you guys. So I love science, love to learn about it, and still somehow after a year of doing the podcast, feel like I know nothing. But it does make me really happy to learn that there's so many areas of science that scientists don't know anything about. So that makes me feel like, okay, well, we're kind of in the same boat here when it comes to, like you said, like dark matter, dark energy. I don't know if I'm even saying that right. What a schmuck.
Yeah. I think it's definitely impossible for any one human being to know everything that all humans know, you know? Like, we're all experts.
Anymore, yeah.
Yeah, we're all experts. You're expert in something and, you know, in things that we have no idea about.
Great. So, I'll teach you guys some jazz chords after this.
Yeah,
we can hang out.
In the show, we're big believers in the idea that you don't need a degree or a PhD to participate in science, to ask interesting questions about science, to learn from it and or even contribute to the search for it.
Yeah.
Science is a part of being human. You see, especially in kids, right? Kids ask the best questions because they're curious about the world. We all want to understand the world. And something else really exciting about it is that there are big questions. You don't need a science degree to understand the question, right?
Totally.
Like you're saying, what is dark energy? How did the universe begin? These are fun questions everybody wants to know the answer to.
Well, today you have four really interesting and tough questions, I think, for Daniel here.
Great.
And for us here today. You have questions about the recent black hole picture.
Yes.
The photo of the black hole.
Yes.
You have questions about Jupiter and what's at the core of it. And questions about the Big Bang and the future of humanity. So not small questions here, Ethan.
No, yes. I'm going big today. I'm here to light a fire.
No questions about secret Jelly Belly flavors or anything. We're going big.
No, we're going big. I don't know which one you guys want to start with. I feel like the future of Earth one is it might be like grim. So I don't know.
Okay.
Like sometimes we get into that zone on Bad Science and I feel like, oh no, we got to like get away from this because it's like, it's dark, you know, where we're at right now a little bit.
Well, you're assuming the future of humanity is grim. Is that?
I just think that we could go there. That's all I'm saying. So I don't know if you want to leave that one for last. I'm just throwing it out there.
I feel like that's a good one to end on.
Let's end on a downer. That sounds good. End with a bang. We'll end with a bang. How about that?
Well, I mean, assuming people are still listening by then.
Assuming the Earth hasn't ended by the end of this podcast.
Yeah, maybe it'll have ended by then, in which case it's all moot.
I mean, you never know.
Somebody in a missile silo is going to press the button just before they listen to that part of the podcast.
We just need Tony Stark to go after it and catch it and throw it into a portal.
A wormhole, yeah. Our wormhole defense.
A plot hole or a wormhole?
I don't know.
I think they're the same thing.
In the Avengers movie, maybe. Whew. With that, let's take a break. We'll be back in just a short minute.
We Yeah, the recent discovery or advancement, I guess, is this picture, is the black hole picture, which I thought did look like the interstellar like rendering of a black hole.
Yeah, they got that pretty close, right?
Yeah, so cool.
I thought it looked more like a fuzzy donut, actually.
A fuzzy. Oh yeah, it did kind of look like
a little bit. It looks like a Krispy Kreme donut.
Yeah.
Well, that's my impression of the whole movie Interstellar.
It's a bit of a fuzzy,
kind of
tasty
as a donut. Stale, mushy.
Stale.
No, but there were people online who thought it was all faked. It wasn't a real picture of a black hole.
Oh.
And it was actually a picture of a donut, like literally
Whoa.
A donut.
That would have been a great hoax.
Really?
Yeah.
I kind of want that to be true now. Mm-hmm.
That would assume a sense of humor in scientists.
Yeah. Which you have never found before.
Which does not exist. Cannot compute. Error.
Which could be disproved by the existence of really funny science podcasts, which...
You're right.
I've heard there are some.
There's a few of them out there that are good. So I was reading very brief research on this, but they needed, and I can't, it was like... What was the name of it? It was like the name of the hard drives were ridiculous. I can't remember what it was called, but they needed these like extra huge hard drive, you know, teraflops or some, I don't know what it was called.
From it, was, the data.
Yes.
It was 11D bajigablops of data.
Yeah, bajigablops, thank you. Sounds like a Rick and Morty alien. But yeah, no, they needed like, I don't know, a bunch of data to, and I saw a picture of it. There's like a lady with like rows of these hard drives, which I thought was really cool. I didn't know if you guys knew about that, but it like was years in the making to get this picture. So, A, why was it years in the making? What were they doing for these years? Why is it so much data? And what are we looking at here?
Yeah, these are great questions.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think there's really sort of two fascinating aspects there. One is like, how did they do it? Like the technology of
yes.
it. Why was it hard? Why did it take so many years? And number two, like, what does it mean? Right.
Yeah.
So how did they do it?
Yeah, maybe step us through like the problem of taking a picture of a black hole in the center of the universe, center of the galaxy. Like, you know, what does that even mean? Like, how far away is it? What's preventing us from just looking at it?
Yeah, and falling into it and dying.
Also a good question.
Right, right. So folks will probably remember black holes are like really, really dense, right? So dense that the gravity inside the black hole is strong enough to bend space so that nothing can escape, right? So it's black because photons even can't escape it. So if you just like saw a black hole in the middle of nowhere with nothing around it, it would be invisible. So, like, you can't really see a black
Whoa.
Hole directly.
It's really scary.
Yeah, unless something passes behind it, right, then you could see, like, its shadow. And we did a whole podcast episode about what is it like to see a black hole, how can you see them? And the short answer is you can't see the black hole directly, but you can see the stuff around it. So, for example, Whoa. You have a black hole, it's gobbling gas, right? It's, like, sucking stuff up from somewhere. And the stuff that hasn't yet gone into the black hole, it's, like, swirling around it. It's called the accretion disk. That stuff is getting hot and confused and upset. Set and banging into itself and emitting like gamma rays and radio waves and all sorts of radiation. And you can see that. That's the part you can actually see.
Oh.
But they took pictures of two black holes or just one black hole?
I think they took pictures of two. They've only released one that I've seen so far.
Okay. And where is that black hole in?
So one that they looked at is in the center of our galaxy, right in the center of the Milky Way. They haven't released that one yet. The other one is in another galaxy. And the difficulty of seeing black holes, I think you were leading to, is that black holes are at the center of galaxies and they're surrounded by huge blobs of stuff. So you just like look in the center of the galaxy, you're going to see the stuff around the black hole, like the dust and the gas and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's hard to see through that. And these galaxies are really far away. So this galaxy that they were looking at is really far away and makes the black hole like super duper tiny.
It seems almost impossible to me. I mean, you can't even see galaxies when you look at the night sky. Or if you see one, they're not that big, right? It's just like a little fuzzy oval. And so you're saying that we actually took a picture of a black hole inside of that little tiny blob that's bright.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing because if you use the Hubble, like the telescope, the best telescope we have in space, to zoom in on those galaxies, you can get pretty nice pictures. But if you take like a single pixel from the Hubble, the black hole is like a tiny, 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 tiny thing inside a single pixel of the most powerful telescope. So one problem is they're basically invisible. The other one is it's small and really, really far away. So this is a hard thing to look at.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I'm confused by a few things. Number one, conspiracy corner here. Why not release the
Just
other
picture? Of a donut?
Why not release the other picture?
You said they have two and one's released and one's not? So what's the government hiding?
Oh, good question.
Aliens and chocolate. That's usually the answer.
That was the picture of. It was like the black hole, but then there's like an alien doing a selfie yeah. with chocolate.
I want to see that.
They found the Tesseract. No, I think they're just not done processing that one yet. So it's coming out. Yeah.
Well, okay, good.
It's coming out.
They're staggering them like Game of Thrones episodes. So it's not a binge-worthy...
Science is coming.
They're waiting for the ad campaign, you know, to get the right sponsors and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, sure.
And the reason it took so long is that it's really far away and it's tiny.
Uh-huh.
And the wavelength of light that we use to see it, radio waves, are really large. And so in order to see something really, really far away, you need a really, really big telescope. You got to gather enough light. And also because the length of the light waves is so large compared to the size of the thing and the distance, you need basically an Earth-sized telescope.
Jesus.
Yeah.
So we don't have that.
We don't really have that. We don't have a single telescope that's the size of the Earth, right?
Okay.
But what they did is they said, let's take a bunch of telescopes all around the Earth.
Oh.
Okay, and take pictures from each of those little ones and then pretend that they're all part of a bigger telescope.
Okay.
And you're thinking, okay, but you're missing most of the telescope. And that's true, but you know, the Earth spins and it rotates, so you can sort of like fill in the gaps. So you're never taking one Earth-sized picture, but if you wait a few years and then you collect 11 gigablops of data and analyze it, you can reconstruct the black hole because it's not like an action shot, right? It's not like in motion. This is like integrated over years, a single picture.
And as the Earth rotates around the sun, too, right? Did that give us an extra little bit of, like, coverage?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. As the Earth spins and it rotates and, you know, our galaxy is moving compared to that galaxy. And so we get all these different angles.
Whoa.
And you have to add them all up to get one picture.
So it's not a picture. It's not a snapshot of a moment of this black hole's life. It's a combination of a bunch of cameras taking a bunch of pictures and then...
For a long time.
Yeah, it's like say you had a statue in a town square and you had a picture from somebody's tourist photo of the back of it.
Yeah.
And then a year later, somebody took a picture of the front of it.
Yeah.
A year later, somebody took a picture of the side. And you put together like a 3D reconstruction of what that statue looked like.
Got you.
Because statue's not moving, it's pretty cool. You can do that.
Okay, but the stuff around the black hole is moving, right? I mean, can we... Do we know how fast that stuff's moved? Like the speed at which it's getting sucked into the abyss?
Yeah, it's moving really fast. It's getting sucked in there. And I was reading
why it's
that,
glowing, right? It's falling and being shredded so fast that it just explodes, right?
Yeah, and the environment around a black hole is not a nice place to be, right?
Okay.
Gravity is a really powerful force, but the strength of the force varies with distance. Like the further you are away from the black hole, the weaker it is, and the closer you are, the stronger it is, right?
Right.
But because the gravity is so strong near the black hole, that if you were near the black hole, the force of gravity on your legs, for example, would be different than the force of gravity on your head if there are different distances. And that means there's effectively a force tearing you apart. So black hole, if you got near it, would literally pull you in pieces because of the differential gravity on the different parts of you.
Mm.
So I wouldn't recommend it.
Okay.
And that's what's happening to the gas. That's what Jorge was saying. So that gas is getting squeezed and pulled and torn apart, and that makes it glow. And that's what we're seeing is the glow of the gas around the black hole.
Interesting.
That's the donut.
That's the donut.
That's the fuzzy donut.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the thing that looks like a donut, not actually a donut hoax. Yeah.
Okay.
Crazy. So it's like space is black, and then you got the glowing stuff around the center, the edges, but then the center is black again, right? Because that's what the black hole...
That's right. That's the event horizon. That's the place after inside which no light can ever leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you see in the picture is gas around the black hole, right, which is glowing. And then in the center is blackness, right? And that's where the black hole is.
Well, it just looks like blackness, but actually it's like a wormhole to the other side of the universe.
Right.
That's right. Yeah. To the DC universe.
Right. Yeah, okay. I just wanted to make sure.
Exactly. And the size of that hole is not really the size of the black hole itself, right? Like the black hole, we don't know what's happening inside the event horizon, like huge mystery of science. Like what's in there? Is it a tiny little dot that's super duper heavy? Is it some quantum fuzziness? Is there something else going on? We don't know.
Oh.
But there's a sphere we call the event horizon that says nothing from inside here can ever leave.
Okay.
But the picture you see of the black hole is actually bigger than that event horizon.
Whoa.
Yeah, because it's really complicated, the space around a black hole. Like you look at something, you imagine that you're seeing the photons sort of in the same order that they were sent to you. Like I see the photons from your head above the photons from your foot. So imagine your head's above your foot, right?
Right.
But if there's some like complicated lens or mirror between us, that can get all mixed up, right?
Sure.
Well, a black hole is a huge complicated lens. It bends space.
Whoa.
So part of the blackness you're seeing is like the backside of the event horizon, because light from that comes around and gets bent towards your eyes. So it's a really complicated
it's
mix
like
of all sorts of stuff.
It's like a glitch in the matrix here,
yeah.
What you're describing.
Pretty
it's like
much,
a
right?
broken part of reality.
It reveals the matrix, right? It shows us how the matrix actually works. It tells us like what's going on in science. These are the best, the most extreme areas of the universe are the place to learn like where things break down and where we don't understand them. And so that's why it's pretty awesome.
But he's sort of right in that it does break our models of the universe, right? Like things like we don't have a good model for what's happening inside of a black hole, right? Like
that's
everything
right.
just breaks down.
We have two models for what's happening inside a black hole. They don't agree. Both of them are wrong.
Wow.
And so, yeah, we don't
but
know.
But they're both right about everything else in the universe.
Yeah.
They just disagree about what's inside the black
hole. Exactly. And the black hole is the place where they disagree most and also a place where we can't look inside. So that's like frustrating and tantalizing and amazing.
Yeah. Do you prescribe to, you know, that this could be a interdimensional thing? Like there's some other... I don't know, dimension or universe, multiverse, like, and black hole is the, I don't know, what entry point for something. Does that make sense?
That would be pretty awesome if it were true.
Okay.
There are a lot of theories of wormholes, like how black holes could be connected to white holes, and they could be, and these are really big black holes. So, you know, it honestly, it could be true. Like all that crazy stuff you just said, honestly, could be reality. That's
all
the
right.
thing I love about it. Like,
great.
You know,
does he get credit for it though? If it turns out to be true?
Oh yeah,
I'm not sure he's the first person to.
Is he credited
it
to?
Yeah, maybe that's a unique set of science words nobody's ever said before.
All right,
in that order.
Hey, I'll take it.
I'll give it to you. You get an honorary degree from Daniel and Jorge University.
Yes, finally, our mom's gonna be so proud.
But I think also there's a larger context. Like, I think some people think, oh, we saw a picture of a black hole, so now we know they're real. We sort of already knew they were real.
Okay,
we could tell the black holes were there indirectly from their gravity, the way the stars move around them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of black holes are not that hard to see. Like the gas around them is super bright. It's actually one of the brightest things in the universe. We call them quasars. They emit a huge amount of radiation. These ones that they took a picture of mm-hmm. are the more common ones that are not very bright, that are hard to see. That's why it's so impressive. But
Wait. If quasars are the brightest thing, it's easy to see, and it's around the black hole, why haven't we seen pictures of that?
We have. We've seen quasars. Quasars are all over the place.
Well,
yeah.
But we've seen them as... stars, basically. We've never had this kind of detailed picture of an actual black circle, right? This is the first time we see like an actual black circle, right?
Mm. The cool thing about this is it's the first time we've seen them in this way, this directly, and resolved the shape of the event horizon. That's the thing we hadn't seen
shape,
before.
Yeah.
It's like, what does the event horizon look like? We think it's a circle. What if it was something else? What if it was a hexagon?
Yeah.
Right? Or like a big middle finger or, you know,
or a
question mark.
Right, or a cube, like
a
the
big
Tesseract.
Cube, yeah.
Or the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. symbol or something, right? That would be pretty cool.
So that's what you're looking at in the picture then, right? That's you're looking at the glowy stuff, the donut is the gas around the black hole, but then what you're seeing, the black spot in the middle, that is like the event horizon of a black hole. That's like the spot
okay.
where not even light can escape.
It's the first time that we can put it as our wallpaper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First selfie.
Very cool. And wait, what about white holes then? That is also real. Have we seen those? Do we have pictures?
White hole could be real.
Ooh.
We don't know.
Oh.
Theoretically possible. Never been observed.
Wow.
But yeah, could be a thing in the universe for sure.
Could be a thing. Okay, stay tuned.
And remember, black holes used to be in the could be a thing in the universe category, but nobody really believed it because it sounds too crazy. Now, actually a thing, we have pictures of them.
Yeah.
So there's a good, long, rich history of stuff going from crazy idea nobody really believes, but we can't rule it out, to look, there's 100 of them over there.
Yeah.
So that's pretty awesome.
Wake up, you doubters. Yeah.
The universe is filled with crazy, nasty, hot stuff, weirder than we could ever imagine. So
yeah.
it's a great source of entertainment for me.
Cool. Well, that's your first question, Ethan. We'll get to your other questions, but first, let's take a quick break. All right, we have Ethan Edinburgh here from the podcast Bad Science, a podcast which deconstructs science fiction movies with real scientists and comedians.
Yeah, yeah. Doesn't even have to be science fiction movies. Just there's a science spin on, we'll attack it.
Science-y movies.
Yeah. And you ever like take a movie and you're like, actually, this is all good science, so we should rename our podcast or cancel this episode. Has that ever happened?
Accurate science. Sometimes there are, like, Apollo 13 was one of them, that the science was all pretty, you know, accurate.
Have you ever watched a documentary by accident and be like, oh, wait, we can't. No. This is all true.
Have
you ever dismantled a documentary, claimed it was bogus, then discovered it was real?
Yeah, that's normally what we do. We will just use it as like a launching pad to talk about science. So I'm not in the field, you know, I'm not trying to attack these movies or say like, oh, this is wrong and this isn't good. You know, I mean, normally because I don't know anything, but also just to, say the movie is great. Here's what I love about it. Here's what didn't really make sense to me. But let's dive into how snakes reproduce, because that's interesting.
Oh, I see.
That is interesting.
Yeah, we just did anaconda, so it's on my mind.
Wow.
It was a good one.
So they just like butt off a little mini anaconda off the back, or how does that work?
It's honestly
eggs.
Nuts.
Do they have eggs?
How snakes, I had no idea. Well, I'm not going to get super into it because we don't have a ton of time.
Well, we can look up your podcast, right?
Yeah, yeah. Go listen to the anaconda episode. I'll just tease you with the fact that males, and this is across a lot of species apparently, you know, multiple males will like smell the pheromones from a female and all want to mate with the same female, and they'll create this anaconda ball. So like there's like seven snakes all wrapped in one, and they'll just stay that way for like weeks at a time, fighting and trying to mate, and it's a disaster. It's
you just
a mess.
Gave all our listeners nightmares.
I know, I'm sorry. It's a ball of snakes, guys.
This is real, it's out there. It's probably not in your backyard.
It's scarier than the film Anaconda, so imagine that.
Snakes on a podcast.
Yeah, finally.
Well, today we're answering your science questions about physics and the universe. And so your next question is about Jupiter.
Right. So I've always been fascinated with Jupiter because it's the largest planet and it's like a gas giant, and that huge red spot is super weird. And I remember learning as a kid that we just don't know what's in the middle because we just can't send anything out there. We can't measure what's there. And so I want to know if that's still true, and what do you guys think, you know, theoretically is in the middle, you know, and why can't we tell? We can see a picture of a fuzzy donut in the middle of the galaxy, and we don't know about Jupiter.
Yeah. Why is that, Daniel?
Well, we actually have learned the core of Jupiter is actually a huge ball of snakes.
Oh, yeah. They're all fighting.
It's amazing. It's a fascinating question. And, you know, it's really interesting. Like, we see these things in the sky. Can we understand them? What's in there? Are they like our planet or not? When I was a kid, I always wondered, like, why can't you land on Jupiter? You just, like, sink forever through gas and pass through the other side or something. But Jupiter is really interesting. It's got a lot of layers. It's like an onion, you know, or you cut through it and you get to different stuff. We can actually probe it a little bit two different ways. One is we can study the density of Jupiter.
Okay.
Because we fly satellites around it, and those satellites can measure the gravity of Jupiter. And the gravity of Jupiter depends on how much stuff there is, right? More stuff, more gravity.
Right.
So we can measure, sort of in the same way that we can measure like what's inside the Earth, we can measure the density of different regions inside Jupiter just by measuring how the gravity changes as you move around, which is pretty cool.
Okay. So this is sounding like we do kind of know what's in there.
So that gives us a picture. And then once we actually dropped something into Jupiter, and we're like, okay, let's see what's in there.
Yeah.
And they built this thing. They try to make it really, really tough. I guess they used, you know, adamantium or vibranium or whatever.
Sure.
And they dropped it in there.
Iridium.
And it lasted like, you know, tens of seconds before it was just like crushed into a tiny pulp. So because Jupiter is really big, and so it has a lot of gravity, and so it's squeezing things really, really hard. And so it's really dense.
Okay.
And so mostly Jupiter is a huge ball of hydrogen. But that ball of hydrogen gets compressed by all that gravity, and crazy stuff starts to happen.
Well, it changes a state of matter, right? Like most of the ball that you see in Jupiter is like hydrogen, right? But it's in different forms of hydrogen.
Ooh.
Right, so as hydrogen gets hotter or more compressed, it changes, right? Hydrogen here on Earth is just a gas. We can breathe it or, you know, put it in a balloon or whatever, or inside an ill-fated airship, for example, you know, the humanity.
Yeah.
But on Jupiter, it gets compressed, and so the outer layer is gaseous hydrogen. Then you sink down further and you get liquid hydrogen, right? So you compress a gas and it turns into a liquid.
Okay.
And then below that, it turns into this crazy stuff. It's helium rain.
Helium rain?
Rain. It's like drops of helium that are like going up and down, like clouds of helium, then raining down.
Whoa.
Like helium is crazy stuff, and like you got to be really, really dense or really, really cold to get it liquid. So it's under a lot of pressure. So
it's raining inside these other layers of Jupiter.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's
exactly.
raining helium, you're telling me.
Yeah, it's raining helium and
this isn't
neon.
A big practical joke that you're trying to prank me.
I'm okay. trying to actually deliver some real science here.
Okay.
Exactly. And then it just gets crazier. Like, as you go down, you get crazier and crazier stuff. A huge blob of it is this thing we call metallic hydrogen.
Okay.
Which is like hydrogen that acts like a metal, like it conducts electricity.
That likes heavy metal music.
Yeah.
Is that what metal...
I think so.
Yeah, exactly. And it can conduct electricity, it can be a solid, or it can be a liquid, right? So if you went down far enough, you would, like, pass through the rain of helium, assuming you were in some, like, incredibly powerful ship that could withstand all this pressure. And then you would either get to the surface of the, you get, like, an ocean of liquid metallic hydrogen, and then you get to, like, a surface of, like, metallic hydrogen, which I don't know what that would be like.
We don't have that here. We can't
make
that. We
do not have that here. No, exactly.
Okay.
Okay, so that's the answer. That's it's metallic, possibly liquid.
There's one more layer, though.
Ooh.
Because Jupiter is not just hydrogen. Mm. It's hydrogen plus is a bunch of like rocks and other stuff in there. And that stuff all sunk to the bottom. So the very, very core of Jupiter is actually basically a big rock. You know, it's like a big rocky, icy ball.
Okay.
You know, like the kind of stuff that made the Earth. And so when the solar system formed, different planets got different amounts of stuff. Jupiter got a huge serving of hydrogen and a big blob of rock. Earth got mostly rock, right? So you could sort of think of like Jupiter as a much smaller planet with a really, really, really big and really, really dense atmosphere that's like liquid hydrogen. So
okay.
It's pretty crazy over there on Jupiter.
Well, and again, it's not like we have a picture of this or we send a probe down or we've taken x-rays of Jupiter. It's more like we have models of what's going on in there, and those match what we're seeing from satellites that go around Jupiter, right?
That's right. And we can probe it gravitationally. We can also probe it electromagnetically. Like, we can look at the magnetic field of Jupiter, and in order to have a magnetic field, you have to have certain stuff going on inside.
Right.
And so we can compare, like, is the magnetic field the way you would expect if this model works? So it's indirect. Like, we haven't sent probes deep into Jupiter that survived, but we have a pretty good picture. But yeah, it's indirect.
Okay. I do think taking X-ray is a smart idea, though.
You
somebody
think,
should do
right?
that.
Yeah.
Why not?
Get on it.
Okay. So I was also wondering about the Big Bang and if something happened before the Big Bang.
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. Tell me, why do you want to know? Like, if I told you the answer, if I knew the answer and I told you, how would that change your life?
It probably wouldn't, because even just the Big Bang is a huge mystery to me, and how the universe came to be and how it's all evolving all the time, expanding all the time. That's just, mind numbing. But I'm very, you know, it's like that, what comes after the end or what comes before the beginning, you know? So I just was curious if there's any, because we can measure, which I already find fascinating, that the Big Bang even happened, what, 13.8 billion years ago or something
nice,
like that?
Nice, nice.
So just that is crazy to me that we even know that that happened. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, why, if there's any information at all out there, how could that, A, have happened, and what could have possibly been before that?
It's a great question. I think it's a really deep question. I think if we knew the answer, it would change the way we felt about like our whole existence. You know, like if you knew like how the universe came to be and what happened beforehand that made it happen, that's a pretty deep question.
I mean, I feel like
I think it would change the human condition that much. Like, you know, people suddenly abandon Instagram and devote themselves
stop
to
hashtagging.
Knowing more about, you know what I mean? Like, do you think really think people would change their everyday life?
I think so. I think it's a delicate territory, but I think a lot of people believe in a creator and also accept the you know, old universe hypothesis. The universe is 14 billion years old almost. And they imagine the universe had a creator because there was this moment when it started. But what if there wasn't? What if like we knew that that moment was instead the end of the previous universe, just part of some infinite cycle, and there was no moment of creation? I think that argument plays a big role in a lot of people's context for the universe and their belief in God. So I think it would inform people's decisions, just as the more we learn about our origin and where we are in the universe and how big and old it is, we learn about our context, and it changes people's views about how important we are or aren't. So yeah.
It's a great answer.
So what is the answer to the question, though? The answer is we have no idea what came before the Big Bang.
Okay. Right? That's
and,
what I thought.
And also, we might never.
Wow.
Like, it might be impossible to learn, you know?
It might be that you're still in the Big Bang, right, Daniel?
Yeah, there's that also. Like, what does the Big Bang even mean, right? Mm. So, some people think of the Big Bang as this moment very, very early on in the universe when the universe expanded really, really fast.
Right.
And the numbers I'm about to tell you are crazy. It's really hard to imagine, but like the universe expanded by a factor of 10 to the 25. That's like 10 with 25 zeros.
Okay.
In 10 to the minus 30 seconds. So like,
whoa.
Yeah, they went from really, really small to enormously massive really, really quickly.
And it's not moving at that rate anymore? It like slowed down?
Yeah, it did that really, really briefly.
Okay.
And then it just sort of puttered along for about 10 billion years.
Okay.
And then 5 billion years ago, it started expanding again.
Wow.
And we don't know why, but we call that dark energy.
Whoa.
So, you know, loop back to the podcast we talked to you about. That's the Tesseract, man. and, you know, the Infinity Stones were created in the moment of creation,
right.
And
right,
maybe they're
right.
responsible.
I just feel like I'm equally insignificant no matter how the Big Bang happened or what happened before.
No, you're a musical man, so you're definitely significant.
Yeah, people are going to be listening to those records, yeah, for billions of years.
But I think the point is that, you know, 14 billion years ago sounds like a long time, but
sure.
If you imagine maybe the universe is trillions of years, it's going to be around for trillions of years, and you know, technically we're sort of like at the beginning of the universe, right? We could be still in the kind of like the echoes of the Big Bang.
I mean, it still makes me feel like I'm totally meaningless, but I hear you.
Yeah.
And that's nice.
Or special, extra special maybe,
I mean,
right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah? It's both. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. It is both.
And so we look backwards and we try to understand like what happened in those first few moments. And we have some ideas for like, how do you get this crazy expansion and what would you need to make that happen? And we have like a few sort of ideas for how to put that together that are really pretty fuzzy. But what we don't know is how do you create those conditions?
Mm-hmm.
Like in order to make the universe explode in the first few moments, you need this stuff called inflationary matter. All right.
Okay.
How do you make inflationary matter? We literally have zero ideas. Okay?
Okay.
But, you know, that's how science works. We're like, okay, to explain this, we need, you know, something before it. How do we explain that? Okay. Now, how do we explain that? It's a iterative process.
Yeah.
But if the universe started from this like really, really dense state, it might be that all information from what happened before it is destroyed. Right, that it's just gone.
Mm, the records were swiped.
Yes, and so you could never
learn
it.
Nobody will ever know.
Nobody
right?
will ever know.
Not even
yeah.
like humans in billions of years.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's possible. Or it could be that there's like dregs of information and super duper smart scientists will be able to figure it out. Yeah, that could be also. We don't know. But it could be that the universe is in a cycle. You know, it expands. And then we don't know what dark energy is doing or if it could turn around and make a crunch.
Mm.
So it could be that our universe started at the end of the last universe when there was a crunch.
Wow.
There's also a lot of really crazy philosophical questions like, was there time before the Big Bang? Like, what does the word before the Big Bang even mean?
Right, sure.
And you might think,
like, maybe there's no before the Big Bang.
Yeah.
Like, Big Bang is it.
That's it.
When time started, right? And you might think, well, that's crazy. That's just like a bunch of words that don't mean anything. But
that means something to me.
But like, imagine, for example, I think this is Stephen Hawking's analogy. Imagine you're at the North Pole,
mm-hmm.
right? Which direction is north from the North Pole?
Ooh.
There's no more north.
Yeah.
Right? That's the northeast.
You're at
north.
The northest. Yeah.
Exactly.
For sure.
And so it might be the time is like that. It sort of started there, and you can't really, if you go back to zero, you can't really ask what's before because there is no more beforeiness.
Yeah.
We don't know.
I would like that, actually. That seems like a nice, organized, you know, like this is when it started.
That sits well with you?
Yeah, that's nice.
All right.
That's pretty.
That's definitive.
Yes. I appreciate that.
Cool. All right. So you have one last question for us, Ethan, and
yes.
It's a big one.
Yes, it is a big one because I worry about this all the time, and I'm talking to, you know, marine biologists and environmentalists of different expertises, and sometimes we get into this place of sheer frustration because of what's happening with the climate. And to me, it's hard to be optimistic about it, and it seems like we are messing up huge and have been for a while. And, you know, you can look up these like little documentaries even from the 60s and like they knew that what we're doing is bad and we need to stop. And like, we just keep on trucking. So yeah, my question is, how do you guys view that? How do you deal with it? How do you, you know, do you think that we're headed in a good direction or a bad direction or both? Are there things to be optimistic about? And please tell me about them.
No.
All right, I'll see you next time, guys.
We'll end it there.
That's our uplifting podcast. Yeah.
What you mean that when you ask the question, are we going to save the Earth or destroy it? You're talking more about the climate and our ability to live on the planet, not like if we're accidentally going to open a wormhole or...
No, I mean, I think that possibility...
crack the Earth open or something.
Why are you looking at me when you say that? I'm not opening any wormholes.
I didn't look at the scientists working to create black holes here on Earth.
Yeah, plotting, weirdly tapping his fingers. I mean, I think that whole thing is possible. Nuclear bombs, like, okay, that's a threat that, you know, at any moment we could all just end, sure. But it seems like we're in this slow... decline that we know about with the climate, man-made climate change, global warming, all this, you know, melting ice caps. And so, yeah, that's really what I'm referring to. It's like, can we reverse this process? Can we save the Earth? How will we do it? Or, in your guys' opinion, are we screwed? You know?
I think we're screwed, but I think the answer is different from what you might expect, because the thing I worry most about is actually the nuclear bombs.
Oh.
Because I grew up in Los Alamos. I know a lot about, like, the nuclear infrastructure and all this kind of stuff.
Okay.
And, you know, we have a lot of nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of nuclear weapons, and they're all pointed at us, and ours are pointed at them.
Right.
And they're on a hair trigger. Like, you have to be able to launch nuclear weapons within, like, a minute of hearing that somebody else has attacked you. Otherwise, all your nukes are destroyed.
So dumb.
So you need, like, to be able to launch nukes within a minute, no congressional approval, nothing else, just whoever is the president.
It's, like, shocking that it hasn't happened.
Yes, exactly. So now ask yourself this question. How long can we go on for with people having their finger on this button and never press it? Never, ever, 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 ever?
I don't know.
I don't think
a billion years?
I don't think so.
No, I don't know.
I think it's inevitable. I think as long as we have the technology...
You think like a toddler or somebody, they're going to press it at some point.
No, I think there's going to be a miscommunication
right.
or a mistake or a technical glitch. And, you know, we've been close to that several times. Which it's really terrifying if you look up the history of that.
There's been
times when, like, one guy has just said that, no, we're not launching, and has, like, literally saved humanity.
Wow.
So it's pretty dangerous. We're living with huge guns pointed at our heads at a hair trigger all the time. And that will eventually go off. Unless...
Oh.
Climate change destroys human civilization, and then we lose the capability to maintain and fire nuclear weapons.
So hopefully we ruin the planet.
Yeah. And, you know, then the few survivors, you know, living in the swamp will not die of radiation poisoning.
Sweet. Okay. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. Let's, no, but, you know, I think I have a more positive view, which is,
thank God.
I feel like, I think things are not going to get better anytime soon,
okay.
right? And I think part of the problem is just that a lot of it is just kind of a communication problem, you know? Like our forecast for the future is based on models and, you know, our current understanding of things, and they're projecting far into the future. And so right now I think it's harder for scientists to communicate and for people to really absorb the idea that we're heading in a bad direction. But, you know, I think eventually things will become more obvious, and the population, hopefully through podcasts like yours and ours, just kind of become more familiar with science and are able to absorb the message, and hopefully it won't be too late.
Yeah, that would be nice. And maybe in the process, we could also make some sort of nuclear arms treaty where we just all agree to blast them all into the black hole.
Or at least make it like a two-step button. You know, I feel like
that would
help a lot.
Yeah. Or a three-step button. Why stop there?
There's a clever proposal from an ex-defense, Secretary of Defense, to get rid of all of our stationary nuclear weapons. The ones that are, like, vulnerable.
Stationary.
Yeah, the ones like in underground silos. Those are the ones that can be destroyed by their nukes, right?
Mm.
So if your nukes are on submarines, you know, or in the air instead, then you don't have to launch within a minute. You can, like, wait and really make sure it's happening, and you have 30 minutes or so, because your nukes are not necessarily going to be destroyed by their nukes. So you don't have to be on a hair trigger.
Shouldn't we just not allow nukes? I mean, is that a crazy thought? Why do we need huge bombs? Right?
Yeah, why don't we all just get along?
You know, I mean,
let's talk it out.
Let's talk it out, yeah.
I think guns are even unnecessary. Can't we just use a, like, paintball? Why a nuke? Replace nukes with paintballs. That's what I'm
going
for.
Why is there war in human history?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we can answer that today.
Okay, great.
Well, I feel like maybe the answer to all of your questions today has been, we have no idea.
No,
which, by the way, is the title of our book, Daniel, book plug.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, true.
Do you feel like we left you
I felt very informed. I think there was a lot of answers today. I mean, the core of Jupiter was a big one for me. I mean, helium rain was shocking.
The title of your next album,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that sounds like a great rain song.
I mean, that does sound, I'm sure people would be like, okay.
Ad-lib it for us. Come on, what does helium rain sound like?
Helium rain. It sounds like almost like a love song
like
there.
Purple
it's
rain,
like a ballad
with helium in it.
It's actually a cover. It's a Weird Al parody, actually. No, I think, first of all, that's a really intriguing title. I think anything Helium Rain, I'm going to check out just based on the title because, like, what the hell is that? But no, I think the whole, like, the black hole stuff and the, there's a lot there.
Yeah.
I feel, what's the word I'm looking for? Educated.
Cool.
I got schooled today.
All right.
And I like
well, here's
it.
Your degree.
Oh, thank you. Yes. It's so gorgeous.
Put it up on your wall. Show it to all your friends.
I will.
But I think that's a big part of what we like to talk about is that there are still big mysteries out there, and even the scientists and the experts are still asking questions. And everyone out there, people listening, people studying this, and kids in the future can all participate in answering these questions.
Yes.
Yeah, and some of these questions that we're asking, people will know the answer to them in 50 years, right? And they'll look back and be like, ha, 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 those guys didn't know anything. You know, how silly were they?
Hey, listen, if people are listening to this in 50 years, we did something right, boys. That's awesome.
They dig this out of the rubble of human civilization.
Out of the helium rain of our climate.
No, but I mean, imagine like what people used to think about 100 years ago, the questions they had 200 years ago.
Right.
Now children know the answers to those questions,
yeah.
Right? So in 500 years, yeah, six-year-olds will like casually know the answer to questions we are struggling with today. And I love that progression of human knowledge. It's just wonderful to think about.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I hope people enjoyed that. And thank you, Ethan, for being on the show today and having us in your show,
hey,
Bad Science.
Anytime.
Yeah.
An absolute delight.
That's right. Bad Science and good answers.
Yeah.
And you can find Bad Science at
Anywhere you listen podcasts. To podcasts, yeah. And okay. I also, if you're curious, have a very stupid, fake financial podcast called Success Express. They're like 15-minute episodes, and they're just basically a bunch of fake advertisements. So if you want to laugh and not think about anything, that's probably the way to go.
Cool.
Sounds wonderful. Thanks for being on, and thanks to all of you guys for listening to this discussion.
See you next time.
If you still have a question after listening to all these explanations, please drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Daniel and Jorge, that's one word, or email us at feedback@danielandjorge.com. Thanks for listening, and remember that Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.